how about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John Littlefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
All right, this podcast is part of the More Than Baseball organization. More Than Baseball is working daily to better the lives of minor leaguers all over baseball. Our mission is to protect and enhance the future of the game by allowing every ball player to live better life during and after their careers. They have a ton of programs, including financial, education, mental health, and more. Check them out in morethanbaseball.org. Super excited for my guest today, drafted by the Tampa Bay Rays a few years back. How's it going, brother?
How's it going? Nice to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I'm grinding it at work. Like, I do this for the podcast. I do this for the listeners. I'm at work on my lunch break in a random conference room trying to get this done so that we can have this conversation. So how was your off day yesterday?
It was good. You know, just went out and played some golf with the boys. Got a nice minor league discount on a nice course. So shout out to Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail for hooking it up. Makes it easier to enjoy an off day. But it was fun. It was a nice and nice chill day.
Yeah, and are you a big golfer? Like, is that what you normally do when you're in the off season or when you're not pitching?
I mean, yeah, I grew up in Arizona, so I mean, I play my fair share of golf, you know. And I think I've even worked with More Than Baseball a little bit, try to help start some golf tournaments, and work with some people in that too.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. How did you get in contact with More Than Baseball? Obviously, Simon, he plays in your with the organization on your team.
Right.
Did you know him prior to that, or is that kind of how you guys got together?
No, I didn't. The first connection I had with him was in the Rays organization. And I actually was part of their grant program back in, I think it was late 2019, maybe over COVID was when it happened. And we were struggling for money a little bit because we were unsure of what was going to happen. So I applied for the grant program and got accepted. And then I was like, you know, this organization is amazing. I love what they're doing. So I wanted to be a part of it. And I asked him what the steps were to become an ambassador. And Jeremy Wolf, one of the other founders, is from Arizona. So I hooked up with him. We became friends. And we started working on little projects from there, like golf tournaments and just other things. And trying to, like, grow myself into a little bit bigger role with the company, try to get more involved in what those guys are doing.
Yeah, and I just had Jeremy Wolf on a couple of weeks ago. Awesome guy. Like, all three of them, Jeremy, him, and Slade, like, they're doing a great work trying to, like, better the life of minor leaguers, right? Obviously, I say this all the time. Fans, they look at a major league player, and they see that final product. But they don't see, like, the grind, the hustle, the years. Several years, could be up to 8 or 9 years, depending on the player. Grinding in the minors to get there, right? So that's kind of why I like to have guys like you on, where we can kind of talk about your journey, you know, through the minors. And, you know, shout out to Peter Strzelecki. He made his major league debut a couple weeks ago for the Brewers. He's been on the podcast, and Jared Koenig, he's with the A's. He's about to make his major league debut tomorrow. Both two guys I've had on the podcast, and both guys undrafted. So, like, shout out to them for making their dreams come true. But let's talk about you. You mentioned you grew up in Arizona. Like, how was the baseball scene there? Because obviously it's sunny pretty much, or it's nice conditions year round, so you can prepare a ton better than like I've talked to guys in the Midwest who, you know, do basketball during the winter. They do baseball during the summer or whatever it is. Like, how was it growing up for you?
I mean, that's pretty much exactly right. Like, you nailed it. Like, I mean, I was playing club ball at a really young age. You know, I didn't play any Little League, which, you know, Little League is a great option. But back in when I played, club ball wasn't, you know, $700-$800 a month like it is now. So I was able to play club ball at a young age, year round, you know, summer, winter, fall, spring. And, just continued doing that all the way through, through high school, and we, you know, we had winter teams in high school, we had fall ball teams in high school, and then it just kind of keeps carrying over right into college. So the only I think my first off season I ever got was after my first year at JUCO, when I'm like, wow, I actually get to stop playing for a couple months, you know, and give my body a break. But yeah, it was pretty much nonstop year round. I think that's still how it is today.
Yeah, and I know they mentioned, I was talking to Jeremy, and like his team in Arizona was stacked and loaded with talent. How good was your team? Like, did you guys have a pretty good group of guys?
I mean, I think ours was a little bit more put together just by like who we knew, not like, you know, we didn't go out and do any finding kids to play on our team or anything like that. But no, I played on the same club team pretty much my whole life, since I was four until I was probably 14 or 15, with the same coach, you know. And that's something that my parents wanted to instill in me, was you know, a sense of commitment to an organization, and not like switching club teams and going all over the place. So from that little belief core, I stayed on the same club team my whole career until I started playing more competitively. But it's definitely serious, and it's gotten more serious, almost to the point where it's too serious for kids. And you got to take a step back and remind the kids that it's still fun, and you know, they can't be like crying or pouting during the games, you know, because that's taking the fun away from the game a little bit.
You got to remind some of the parents too, because like these parents nowadays, like if their kid is in like an all-star, like they're a failure, right? But they're just, you got to remind them, it's just a game, and you're having fun, right? You know.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I spoke in front of a group of people of probably about like 200 or 300 a couple weeks ago. And that was one of the questions that came up at the end, was, do you have any recommendation for parents, you know, and what their role should be for their kid? And I said, just make sure your kid's having fun. You know, if he's not having fun, find something that he will have fun at, you know, whether it's playing a piano or playing a different sport or something, or, you know, mathletics, go do that. Just make sure your kid's having fun. That's all there is to it.
Absolutely. I mean, we got to remember they're just kids at the end of the day. You mentioned that you were talking in front of a group of people. Was that like a school, or like how did that all come about?
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to get into public speaking a little bit more, based off of like a little bit of my background, some of the things I've had to overcome. And I even have a couple podcast episodes out with some people that I've interviewed. But yeah, no, this was a first time I've spoken in front of like a group of people. It was my friend who lives in Montgomery. So right now I'm in Montgomery in AA with the Biscuits. My friend lives here. He runs a baseball academy called Anchor Baseball Academy. And he was like, hey, can you come speak with the parents and the kids? And I was like, sure. It's probably going to be 15, 20. And it turned out to be 200 or 300.
Yeah.
I had like no preparation at all. So it was a little bit of a trial run to see how long I could let my story go, and then answer questions, all that kind of stuff. But
yeah, you mentioned you have a podcast, like, or you had like interviewed on a podcast, like where is all that at?
So I do all my podcasts on Anchor and YouTube. It's called the Underdog Podcast with a W. And yeah, I've interviewed Jeremy Wolf, and a bunch of other people. Some other guys like Peterson Plaws, who's with More Than Baseball. Mm-hmm. Some other minor leaguers, and even some like businessmen that have had adversity in their life. So it's basically just, you know, talking to people that have had to overcome things to become successful where they are now. So
it's not strictly baseball, but it's just overall life, like overcoming something to find success.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I'll try to connect to as many people as I can, whether, you know, it's whether you're sitting in school having a tough time, or, you know, you're on the mound having a tough time. I try to have an episode for a lot of people.
That's incredible. I'll definitely have to check that out. So speaking of, you know, your story, you went to junior college. You played Wood Bat League, which is incredible, because not a ton of JUCOs are Wood Bat League, or is that kind of common now?
No, just in I don't know if other states do it, but as far as I know, Arizona might be one of the only ones that do Wood Bat Leagues. But yeah, no, I walked on to Yavapai Community College after my buddy got an offer there. And, you know, I just kind of fell in love with the school and didn't know where baseball was going to take me. And, you know, luckily enough, I switched to sidearm, or else I was probably going to get cut from the team. And ended up making the team and throwing like 75 innings that year, and and we actually won the JUCO World Series. So, you know, part of the whole Woodbat thing is we played Woodbat for a whole season, and then we go to our district tournament and then the national championship game, and they say, hey, all you guys that have been hitting with wood bats, you can go to metal bats. And we started hitting farther home runs, and we were just too much, I think, for the competition just because of what we were used to.
Wow, that's incredible. And like, I love talking to guys who went to JUCOs and junior colleges, the grind that is there. Because obviously, like, there's different like regulations when you're in like Division One, like when it comes to like practices and all that stuff. Do you have any like interesting or maybe like funny stories of like your JUCO experience where you can try to explain to someone who maybe didn't go to a JUCO and they just look at you like, really? Like, we didn't do that in our university.
Yeah, I mean, so I got the benefit of going to both, and I got to see the differences between Division One and JUCO, and I can tell you right now that my JUCO group of teammates that I was with was a lot tighter than my Division One group of teammates. And I mean, that's just because I think, you know, we lived together all in the same place. We just grinded out the whole year and how far we went. I mean, it was just a truly a different bond than Division One. You know, everybody I run into with their kid in high school that they say, oh, my kid's trying to get D1 offers. I say, you know, JUCO is good in a number of states, you know, Arizona, Texas, Florida, lots of other states too. And that's a thing that a lot of parents and players overlook, is that the amount of talent in JUCO is unreal. I mean, it's a lot of guys that just didn't have good enough grades, or maybe they had a little bit of discipline problems, or just guys like me that might've been overlooked a little bit, and they just needed a chance. And from there, you get a chance, and you're going to be playing every day as a freshman and a sophomore, which is, you know, I saw in Division One maybe one or two freshmen play, like, all year. Everyone else gets redshirted. And then after your sophomore, you are going to get a lot of Division One chances if you play well. And then you'll start as a junior and a senior. So 4 years of starting against, you know, being redshirted and then maybe 1 or 2 years of starting is a lot better idea, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, for sure. And what was some of the maybe the bigger differences going from like the JUCO to like a, you know, not to a non-JUCO school?
I feel like it was a lot more of a business in Division I NCAA. You know, there was a lot more rules that you had to follow, and there were sponsorships. You know, like, we were Under Armour and Marucci and Easton, and in my Division I, you had to wear all these clothes and follow these rules. And in JUCO, it's kind of just like, you know, your JUCO bandits. Yeah. You go to Dick's, buy a glove off the wall. You wear whatever you can. It's the true nature of baseball in JUCO. And in Division One, it's a lot more of a business, but it's still a ton of fun if you can find the fun in it, which is important.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think out of your JUCO, I think they have a decent amount of like draft picks or guys in major leagues like throughout the last, you know, several years. So like that specific college that you went to like produced like major league talent. It's not like, you know, you're just nobody's out there.
Yeah, I mean, we've got Jojo Romero, who's the latest guy to make it to the big leagues. Then we've got Kurt Schilling as an alumni.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I just played against one of my buddies from Yavapai, Darius Vines, in Double A with the Mississippi Braves. I mean, there's Yavapai guys all throughout the minor leagues and major leagues. Kirby Yates, I think, is a Yavapai guy. Or no, Ken Giles.
Ken Giles is. I don't know where he was, but he was with the Blue Jays, I believe, at one point, or the Astros.
Yeah, Ken Giles.
Yeah. That's awesome. Say it again.
No, I said JUCO is definitely the way to go for sure, I think.
Yeah, and like I've had a ton of guys who have gone that route. Some got drafted, some were signed undrafted, especially with the whole COVID year. I've had a ton of guys on there who just, you know, because of the five rounds, they just didn't get picked, but they would have got drafted otherwise. Like, I know I was talking recently to one guy who said they would make them run up a mountain and down a mountain like almost every other day or every day as like their practice. Like, they would drive to this mountain that was on campus and they had to run up there. And he's like, we never would have done that in a D1 school.
Yeah, that sounds like South Mountain. I mean, I know South Mountain JUCO in Arizona, they did that. And I know at Yavapai, we had this thing called the loop where every day after you threw a bullpen or pitched in a game, you'd have to run. It was like, I don't know if you're familiar with Prescott, Arizona, but it's it's pretty mountainous and lots of hills, and we had to run around the campus and downtown area. It was probably about 2.5 miles, and it ended on a nice little hill run, and I've never had to do anything like that since JUCO. So.
And so you had to do this every day you threw a bullpen, you said?
Every day after you throw, like, you know, a bullpen, inner squad, live stuff.
Wow, that's crazy. So do you ever, when you were at D1 school, like, the guys there, were they ever complaining about maybe a workout, and you just look at them like, look, I had to run 2 miles after every bullpen. Like, this is nothing to complain about.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know, you definitely had some of your, I don't know, whatever the equivalent of bonus babies would be in Division I, you know, where they kind of take it for granted a little bit and think they're entitled to a little bit of stuff. You definitely see a little bit more, especially, you know, as I was a junior going into Division I, and it's like kind of, you know, I get there and then immediately have to play with 17, 18-year-old kids again. It's, you know, a little bit of a culture shock for me. And I'm like, you know, you got to just suck it up and get through it. But, yeah, there's a little bit of that.
Yeah, that's why it's a grind in the JUCO. But I love talking to guys who went the JUCO routes. Incredible stories. I want to talk about this. You played in the Northwood League. Obviously, you played all the way in like Canada. Like, you were like the furthest team away from like all the other guys.
Yeah. So I mean, if you want to talk about a grind, that was probably the biggest grind of my life so far. I mean, we played up in Canada. That was the farthest team away. We were across the border, so every time we went to travel, both there and back, we had to get off at customs and in the border and show our ID, whether it's 6 a.m. on the way back from a game or, you know, 2 a.m. on the way to a game in the States. But I mean, I, you know, got a tough end of the stick with host family and had to like ride my bike to the field every day, which was like 2 miles away.
Jeez.
I think they fed me twice for the whole 3 months I was there.
Wow.
And, you know, that's the same thing. I saw guys show up and leave, and we had a huge list of names on the wall of the guys that couldn't make it. And that goes back to, you know, my time in club ball of a sense of commitment to an organization. And I think it was me and my other teammate from UT Arlington were the only ones to stick it out for the whole year. And, yeah, it was a tough year, but definitely worth it, in my opinion, character builder a little bit. But, yeah.
So were you guys the only team in Canada, or is there another team?
Yeah, only team in Canada. Wow. All the other teams were Minnesota, North Dakota,
and Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wisconsin. Yeah, it was a long trip. I mean, we're talking like over 10 hours consistently.
The closest team was like six. Yeah, that is crazy. So you went from JUCO grind to the Northwoods grind. Like, that's your whole like story could just be defined as like one grind after another. I actually work in Madison, so I work maybe 15 minutes away from where the Mallards play. So I was talking to Simon about that because he's from Madison and was able to play for the Mallards. So I was telling him I probably watched him play, you know, going just to watch those games and not even knowing who he was. But I mean, yeah, I mean, just being able to stick it out for the whole summer, that's incredible. You ended up getting drafted. Like, were there any teams that were heavily interested in you, or were you pretty sure the Rays were the one that was going to draft you?
Yeah, so I mean, after my junior year at UTA, that's when I struggled a little bit, went to the Northwoods League, kind of rediscovered my mechanics, came back my senior year and set like the school record for saves, finished highest in the Sun Belt in saves and like second in the nation in saves. So obviously that got a little bit of interest. You know, I didn't throw too hard. I still don't throw too hard. But yeah, there was teams. There's the A's, the Cubs, the Giants. Not too many, probably a handful, 4 or 5 that talked to me. But the Rays weren't one of them. And, you know, I did what anybody with draft interest would do. And I was sat in front of a computer for 2.5 full days of, you know, watching names pop up on a computer. You know, the first day I'm like, all right, I'm probably not going to go in the top, whatever, 3 rounds or whatever it was. And second day I was like, you know, it might be a chance, but I thought I was going to go in the mid 20s. And like the 31st round comes around and I get a call from the Rays. I haven't heard from any of the other teams. And they were like, hey, I'm sorry. We meant to come out and watch you during the season, but we never had time or were interested in you. no promises we're going to pick you, but if we picked you, would you sign? And I was like, yeah, I'd sign. And in my head, I was fully committed to the idea that if I was going to get drafted within 40 rounds, I was going to take the draft. And if the draft was going to end and I wasn't going to get drafted, I was going to go into Marine Corps Officer Candidate School, which I got accepted to a couple weeks prior to the draft. And you know, the 39th round came around, so I was one round away. And the Rays, I saw my name pop up, and they called me, and I was like, you know what, that's, I got to do it. You know, even though I was accepted into Officer Candidate School, I got to do this, and I'd regret it if I didn't. So definitely still not a regret, and I'm loving it every day. And, you know, grateful for the Rays for taking a chance on somebody a little bit different than everybody else. And I feel like that's what they're really good at, is finding the people that are different.
Yeah, and you mentioned that. Like, I mean, you throw side armor, right? And
yeah,
I mean, the Rays, like, I told Evan Reifert this, another guy on your team. I have had him on multiple times, actually. When he got traded to the Rays, I texted him. I'm like, dude, that's incredible that a team like the Rays, who utilize their bullpen like none other, is interested in you, right? Because they're seeing something in you, and that's great. And you know, I've had him on since, and like we've talked about that. But same thing with you, man. Like when the Rays see somebody like you, like they love their relievers or funky relievers or whatever, like awesome. Like we think about all the like hard throwers, but like they utilize every type of reliever. So was that something that maybe went through your mind as like they're having a conversation with you?
Well, the more I got to know the Rays organization, because you know, growing up in Arizona, that was probably, you know, one of the last organizations I've ever thought of in my life. So the more I got used to the organization, how it ran, then you know, understanding the process, then and I was like, you know what, this makes the most sense out of any team to draft me. You know, if it would have been a different organization, they have different values. You know, it could be throwing hard, it could be, you know, having carry on your fastball or something like that. But knowing the Rays values and beliefs, I know I'm definitely in the right place with the right organization.
And you're killing it. You're in Double A. I mean, you play for a team with an awesome name, the Biscuits. Like how incredible was that? Like, I mean, there's some sweet names, but that has to be, I think that and the Trash Pandas are like my two favorite like minor league names.
Yeah, well, we play them next week. We play the Chattanooga Lookouts this week, and we play the Trash Pandas. We go to Rocket City next week, so look out for that matchup. That'll be an interesting one.
Yeah, and I know a couple guys on that team. I've had them on the pod, and like they've been trying to get me to go down there, and I'm like, it's like a 12-hour drive, like from where. I hear it's incredible. I want to go to Nashville. I know a couple guys who play for the Sounds or the AAA for the Brewers. Mm-hmm. But again, it's just getting time to drive out there. I'm like, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I would love to go out there and see them play, support some of the guys that I've had on here. So this podcast, like I said, we're part of More Than Baseball. Simon, one of your teammates, is the co-founder. Like they've been doing so many cool things. Like they've been helping with like the housing and all that stuff. How has the housing situation been for you? Because obviously that's a new thing, and we were all happy when that came out.
I mean, the Rays do an excellent job taking care of their players. They put a lot of money towards nutrition and like sports science and development. And they also put a lot of effort into the housing arrangements. So every affiliate in the Rays system, we all have our own rooms, which is nice. I know some other guys that just came to our organization were sharing rooms, or you know, I know there's teams that aren't getting paid for the FCL or AZL, or they're getting half pay for it. And the Rays don't do any of that. They look out for their guys. They pay them for their time. And the housing is a good situation for us. I mean, they'll make sure everyone is put up right and has their own little private area.
And how key is that? Just speaking on like being able to provide housing, because this is, like you said, this is all new. Like I've had guys on who said they've shared six or seven guys in a room with like blow up mattresses and like air mattresses, like in the laundry room or the kitchen or the living room. Like this is a new age.
It's really key. I mean, anything that can take the stress off of, you know, whether I have to pay for bills or whether I can see any growth in my bank account is a big thing to take stress off my mind and put it towards, you know, focusing on becoming a Major League Baseball player. And the housing thing is big. I mean, that's $300-$400 a month that I don't have to pay now. And I can, you know, that maybe that'll go into off-season training or something like that. But it definitely has made a big difference.
Yeah, like I said, like they're working advocates for minor leaguers are doing a great job helping out adopt a minor leaguer. There's a lot more awareness of like the struggles that minor leaguers are going through. And it's crazy because I've talked to guys through the off season, and you mentioned kind of going to working out. Like I've had guys who told me they've worked out in like regular gyms, you know, trying to get their baseball workout on, or their Uber drivers. Like Evan, again, he was like woodworking or some furniture making or something like during the off season, like just so they can afford money to like, you know, train to do their job.
Yeah, I did both of those. I did Uber driving and I worked out at a regular gym. So those are two check marks for that situation.
Yeah. So speaking of like the minor leagues, like I find it interesting. I don't say I love this because it, but sometimes we find it humorous because it's crazy that you go through all these things. Wait, what city have you gotten off the bus and you look around and you just think like, where am I? I'm in the middle of nowhere. There's like a Subway and like maybe a Dollar General.
Easy. Kinston, North Carolina.
I was just going to ask you about that. Okay.
Where we played in the championship against Down East in Charleston last year. There's a few places, but Kinston is definitely the one where it's like, what kind of town even is this? Like, when you're in the middle of nowhere, there's nothing to do, nowhere to eat. The stadium is brutal. You know, there's no fans during the championship series. And you go from that to Charleston, where there's like 5,000 fans and an incredible city. I mean, it's such a flip in atmosphere. It's crazy that can even happen. But.
And when you were in Kingston, did you stay at the Mother Earth Lodge or? Yeah. I've had guys tell me horror stories about that with the golf course and like the polka dotted sheets.
Yeah, it's almost like it's a throwback to like the 70s or 80s, and somebody just decided to take a bunch of drugs and design a hotel, and that's where we stayed. So yeah, it's the most interesting minor league city that I've had to play in so far.
Yeah, and like I said, like I've had at least 3 or 4 guys tell me about Mother Earth Lodge and the old fashioned like golf course that they have, where it's just like straight edges, not even like a fun mini golf. It's just like the classic, like old fashioned like motel in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It seems like it's a big deal there. I mean, they've got some Mother Earth Lodge signs up in the stadium and everything.
Oh, so they like sponsor the stadium and all that?
Yeah, they got like a big Mother Earth thing in right field. It's kind of interesting. I don't know how they make any money outside of us staying there.
Well, they probably have minor leaguers like year round, or not year round, but throughout the whole season coming through there.
Yeah,
that's probably the only place they stay.
Business.
They probably get like a discount or something.
Probably. But
did you play any mini golf there or no?
Yeah, I did. You know, you come play mini golf with the trainers and the strength coaches and some other players. It's all right. You know, it's just like somebody, you know, Evan Reifert did some woodworking and built it himself and put it out there. So, you know, it's nothing special, but it's kind of unique. They got shuffleboard and a pool. So, I mean, it's decent.
It's probably a step up then from some other places you've been to.
Yeah. I mean, the hotels are usually regular, you know, like normal Holiday Inns. And, you know, it's kind of cool to see unique places like that, but I definitely got tired of it a little bit after I think we spent over a week and a half there straight playing. So we ended our season in Down East the last week of the year, and then we played them for the championship series. So we were there a while.
Wow. And you can only do so much mini golf. And there's like nothing. I think I was talking to Evan. There's like nothing there to eat. Also, he mentioned there's like a cafe or something there. But other than that, it's like
workout, and that's about it.
Yeah, there's nothing else there. And like I said, I say funny, but like it's only funny to us because we think, wow, like how can someone who's a professional baseball player go through something like that? Anyway, have you had any interesting fan interactions? Because I love asking this question because I get like the most random answers. Like I've had guys say fans ask them to sign their foreheads, or fans, you know, begging for gloves, and they're like, dude, I only have one glove. I can't just give away my glove.
Yeah, I mean, going back to JUCO, we stepped off the bus in the World Series, and first time ever at a big event like that, I step off the bus and there's a lady staying there, and she said, "Hey, can I have your glove?" Sorry, I need that. I'm a JUCO player. I don't have any more gloves. But going to the minor leagues, I mean, I had some really cool fan interactions. Throwing sidearm kind of generates a little bit of an audience for mm-hmm. me. I try to reach out to as many people as I can, or like answer Instagram messages and help kids out if they need help pitching. So like I've gained some pretty close friends through there, and like I've given away a pair of sunglasses and signed them for a kid. I had a guy create a baseball card for me and then bring it and give it to me. That was really cool.
Like he made it himself, like Photoshop or whatever he did, and created it.
Yeah,
nice.
Like took a picture of me, then like edited it and printed it out on cardstock and gave it to me with all my stats and a bio. And that was pretty cool, because you know, being a 39th rounder, I haven't had, you know, my Topps deal break out yet. So it was nice to see kind of like a unique piece of artwork like that. But yeah, I mean, I always like to try to talk to fans and kids as much as I can.
But, yeah. What about like the autograph guys? Like, do you ever have guys come up to you with just like the book of autographs, and they're just kind of scrolling through, like, "What's your name?" And they're just scrolling through.
Yeah, that's always a good one, where they're like, "What's your name?" And then you tell them, and then they have to look through it and find it. So, I mean, you know, those guys, I mean, I'll stop and sign their stuff. But, you know, if it's like after a bad loss and they're sitting there asking me like, "Hey, what's your name?" I'll just like, you know, like, that's kind of tough. You know, if you don't even know my name and you're asking me to stop and sign something, you know, what's your angle? You know, you're probably just trying to get me to sign it so you can make some money. But I definitely find more meaning in the little kids that are genuine and polite and ask for, you know, personal items or a signature or something like that. That'll always mean a little bit more.
Yeah, I remember, you know, I don't know if you know Brad Case. He plays for the Pirates. He also has a podcast from the baseball. He mentioned that one time in, I want to say Altoona or wherever they play, one of the fans had made like a replica of him out of tin with like the ice cream cone hats that you put ice cream in, and gave it to him for his like birthday. And he's like, "All right, that's pretty cool." But with his face like painted on there, I was like, "All right, that's unique." Like these minor league experiences that you guys have, it's crazy, because the minor league stadiums are smaller. You know, the fans are pretty much right on you. Like I remember watching a game, and like after the game, you guys are walking right through like where we're sitting. This is in Beloit, Wisconsin. I don't know if you ever played there, but that's probably one of the worst stadiums like ever.
I haven't. No, I haven't played there yet.
Yeah, well, it's they just got a brand new stadium, but like prior to that, like it was like Kingston is where I got was told, and then Beloit, Wisconsin was like, these are the worst stadiums like I've ever played in.
That's is that double A?
That's High A Wisconsin. No, yeah, High A Wisconsin. So it's Midwest League or whatever it is now.
Yeah. No, I didn't get to play there.
Yeah.
But
so when are you a superstitious player? Like, what is your like pregame kind of thing? Like, what is your everyday?
That's another thing that I kind of came to a little bit of realization with in my college and pro ball life is, I'm a big believer in the superstitions that don't directly affect the way that you play, like physical performance. Mm-hmm. Try to get rid of them. That's my opinion. You know, like, whether it's how many, you know, protein shakes you drink before the game, or, you know, if you tie your shoes a certain way, like those things don't directly affect how you play. And that's just one more thing that if you don't do it right, you're going to be thinking about it. And that could throw off your mental game. So, you know, I really worked hard last year to think about, you know, what kind of dumb stuff do I do that doesn't directly affect how I play, and just say, you know what, forget it. Like, if it's not my warm-up routine, like the way I play catch or my pitch grips, it's not healthy for me. So no, I'm not superstitious.
What is maybe one of the weirder or not maybe weirder or unique superstitions you've had, like a teammate? You don't need name names, but like maybe you're like, you literally do that every day? Like, come on, guys.
I mean, I've had some teammates that definitely have a process, like a lot of supplements, a lot of I mean, that could help too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it almost seems like they've got their own little snack bar, you know, drink station that they've got to do the same before. But in terms of not superstitious stuff, I would say, I don't know if you know who Taj Bradley is, one of our top prospects. He's got one of the most developed routines, like strict for himself, that are directly affecting the way that he plays. And I mean, it definitely shows. Everything he does is very scripted out, and he's got his routine down to a T, and that stuff is important. Routine is definitely important, but for superstitions, I mean, there's, you could think of something and make it a superstition. So I'm sure there's guys out there that don't mention something that they do, but they do it. And there's some weird ones.
Yeah, no, for sure. I was talking to someone who said, like, he had a pitcher on his team who was performing so poorly that, you know, he did a shower with his full uniform on, cleats, everything. And he said, next, it worked. He said he's pitched better after that. So, I mean, sometimes these random things, maybe it's all like a mental thing where it just kind of flips that switch. But, you know, no, superstitions, like, baseball players are superstitious. Like I said, I've talked to some who have like the most random, like, are you sure that really works? And they swear by it.
I think that's just because it's such a perfect, like a perfectionist game. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many little things that can go wrong that, you know, if you find something that might be able to flip the switch the other way, you might start believing in it. But the other sports, you know, maybe like football where it's, you know, more just like run full speed and hit a guy. Like there's not really time for, you know, thinking about how you tied your shoes because you're just thinking about trying to run the other guy over. But
that's a good point.
Yeah, there's a lot of mentality stuff in baseball.
So when you're in the game, like, what is your go-to snack? Like what is your, like, are you like a high chews guy, a seeds guy? Like, what is your go-to in-game snack?
Well, we just came from, and where did we just come from? I don't know. I forget where we were. We got a ton of, we're in Mississippi with the Braves, and the clubby there had blow pops, like the sucker. And I probably went through like 35 or 40 of those, like, throughout the week. And that's probably my go-to snack right now out in the bullpen, just sitting there.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like I those are like underrated. Like I feel like I had a ton of those when I was younger, but like I feel like I don't see those as much as like I used to. I used to be a big blow pop guy, but then I had sisters who would like get the gum in their hair, so my mom would be like, no blow pops, kind of thing, have them ruin it for us, but whatever.
That's the first time I've seen them in a while too, and you know, it kind of got hooked back into that
for sure. So when you're not pitching and you're not working out, like, what do you do? Like you said, you golf. Obviously we've talked before, you're a gamer. Like what is that, what is your go-to game?
Right now it's MLB The Show. You know, again, 39th rounder, so I'm waiting around anxious until I can get put in the game hopefully soon. And then MLB The Show, you know, I've played Apex, Fortnite, Call of Duty, even like golf video games, stuff like that. It's just, you know, relaxing way to spend some time. I also enjoy, you know, fishing a lot. Living in Florida the last off season, that's something I did a lot. And golf and just like hanging out with my dog is a good time too.
What kind of dog do you have?
I have an 8-month-old black lab.
Awesome. I have a miniature pincher mixed with Chihuahua. So,
nice.
Oh yeah. She's like the perfect size. She's not too small. She's not too big. And she doesn't really bark a ton. Like she has like all the perfect qualities that you would want in a dog. Absolutely. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. My dog hasn't got to see me play yet. My girlfriend and my dog were in Bowling Green for a while when I got called up. So they missed about a couple weeks of the season, and they're going to be able to finally see me play this week. And my dog will be able to come to my first game on Sunday and watch me play. So I might let her run around the field a little bit.
That's incredible. I love seeing those dog videos and dogs on the field. That's awesome. Well, hey,
Andrew, really trying to train her to be a bad dog. So we'll see how that goes.
Another underrated thing, like we need more bat dogs in baseball. Like I would love to see that in the major league stadiums. Like how electric would that be to kind of hype up the crowd, seeing a dog go out there and collect the bats.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of minor league, you know, games and in between inning things that they do that I think if they were put in the major leagues, it would grow the fan base too.
What is one thing that you think, real quick before we get off here, like what is one thing besides the dog that you think would help grow the fan base?
You know, honestly, I just think any kind of games that you can think of, you know, like almost every inning in between a minor league game, there's something going on the field that interacts the fans. You know, whether it's like trying to catch tennis balls like in oversized pants, or you know, in Charleston, like after the game, they did like a helicopter ball drop, and if the ball landed in a hoop, you won like $50 or something like that. And there's just so many great ideas in the minor leagues that I think if they were applied in the major leagues, you'd get fans that aren't even baseball fans to come to the games because they're interested in other stuff. I mean, there's a reason why fans go to more Firework Friday games is because they want to see fireworks.
Absolutely. Know? Yeah, like the Savannah Bananas. Is it Savannah Bananas?
Yeah.
Yeah, like they have – they're just absolutely electric. Like, they sell out. Like, Major League Baseball can learn a lot just going to those games, kind of maybe implementing some of those things. But, Andrew, yeah. I want to thank you for coming on. I do appreciate you taking your time to come on, talk to me for a little bit. We'll have to have you back on. I told you we're at the game sometime. Like, I'm not a MLB The Show guy. Like, I suck at that. But, like, everything else, like, we'll have to squad up sometime.
Yeah, maybe we'll hook up on Call of Duty and do a little, like, interview or something and play Call of Duty.
Yes, we would totally do that. And, like, I mean, we'll have to maybe during the off season have to get a couple Fortnite or Call of Duty, like, tournaments going with some of the minor league guys and see what we can do with More Than Baseball. So get some of that going.
Yeah, let's work on that. That sounds fun to me.
You got it. All right, Andrew, you have a great rest of your day, man.
Thank you. You too.
All right, bye now.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island.
He's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.